And we are live on the Siren Sister College YouTube podcast. This is our first live podcast. Hopefully, we've got a loyal listener out there waiting, ready to go. This episode, the first podcast, is going to be about the subject of podcasting. We thought we'd go meta and see where we go from there. And in order to help us get started, we do have an in-studio guest with us, Ewan Rankin, who is here because he is a long-time podcaster, one of the original OG podcasters on the sort of British podcasting scene. And hopefully you've got some insight to give to us about how it started, how the industry works. So I definitely hope so, because we've got some podcasts to fill. So we're going to do that. We've got a few different segments. We're going to talk about the history of podcasting, some technology for the tech geeks. And then we've got a middle segment where we're going to investigate some ideas of some student potential podcasts in a section that in the last 5 seconds I've decided to call podcast or not.
Okay.
Because I only had 5 seconds to think of that.
All right, mate.
And I think I learned from you that we plan everything meticulously.
Nope. Don't do planning.
We don't do planning.
It's the only podcast I've ever planned for.
Yeah, and that's good. How's it going so far with the planning?
We'll be fine. Let's keep going.
We'll keep going. Okay.
We can edit.
We can edit. Right. So basically, we have a history that goes back a long time to, I believe, 2007, 2008.
2008 was my first ever podcast.
Yeah, 2008. Yeah.
I used to live opposite a guy called Mark Silk, who was a voiceover artist. He used to do Fifi and the Flower Tots and Rory the Racing Car and that kind of stuff.
Oh,
Bumble
okay.
and Slugsy. And he and I discussed doing a podcast, but the problem was he was so busy that we never actually got to do it. So I got frustrated and I started a daily news show for technology that was just 3 minutes long. I did that every day for 3 years.
Because, of course, in 2008. You were, at that point, you were already a technologist yourself professionally in your day job, weren't you?
Well, I've been a photographer for 40 years, so I came at technology through the photography route. And I just had a general interest in tech, and of course, you know, I had a couple of old Macs that I used to use when Photoshop had come out. So I had a little bit of a grounding in understanding the basics. But I was always the stupid one on the podcast. I was the one asking the stupid questions.
Okay, so we'll flip that role over for this one then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. In 2008, in terms of technology-wise, because obviously the technology landscape now is transformed from what it was then. 2008, what are we talking about? Xbox what? Xbox One? Original Xbox?
Original Xbox,
Original
yeah.
Xbox, yeah. Mm. That's the gaming tech.
In terms of the tech when we started, I mean, just even the microphones, there was the digital microphones that were around that would actually work off USB. The bit depth wasn't there because it was USB-A, so they were usually really poor quality. And we've had a conversation earlier on today about, you know, you can get away with bad video, you can't get away with bad audio. People just won't listen to it, and they won't watch stuff if the audio is bad either. And I always had a good mic. I had a decent XLR mic, but then the interfaces trying to get that in was difficult. And you had lots of latency as well, so that, you know, you'd get feedback loops on them, trying to talk to other people and do a mix minus where their audio wouldn't go back to them and things like that. Those were big issues when we started doing panel shows in 2009. And then FireWire came along, and FireWire audio interfaces just changed the landscape for everybody. The latency had disappeared. It automatically did mix minus on all the feeds that were coming in from separate computers before it went back. And I had a FireWire mixing desk that had presets on it, so I could instantly fade out and ride the sliders for sending audio back to other people.
Yeah, and of course the internet itself was a different beast in those days. Do you remember what?
Tried to broadcast video with 20 down and 10 up at best.
Yeah. So these young people, they don't know, they're born really with the speeds we've got now. And the
I mean, it is an entirely different landscape from what it was. You know, like I said, when we first started the video shows, on the screen in front of me, I had four Dell screens that I'd bought that were identical. They were linked to four G3 Macs that two of them had actually been sent in by listeners to support the network. They were wired Ethernet, and then they would feed into, and I put the audio from them into the desk. Periodically, it'd just go boo, and everything would disappear. I had a Sony Handycam just to my right out of shot, which was looking at those four screens, and then I'd have to be careful not to raise my right hand if that was the shot, and you never got feedback on when you were switching. You only had two modes, and that was it. People used to go, oh, what do you use to generate your lower thirds? Well, they're printed on photographic paper, and they're physically stuck on with blue tack. It wasn't the genius of move or anything like that. But I come from an era where, you know, when you shot film, you didn't have digital. There was no Photoshop. You had to physically make props. You know, if I wanted to shoot a pretty poly model because they got a 2-for-1 offer and she was standing next to a 2, I had to make the 2 out of polystyrene so she could lean on it. Not very hard, very hard, otherwise it would break. So I've always had that model-making background, that problem-solving background. So trying to get it to do it when it was cheap and when the tech wasn't there. I mean, they were switching things out there, but they were £20,000 a pop, and there's no way I could afford that.
No.
So it was always trying to be that trying to be a tech innovator, if you like, on a how hard can it be kind of basis.
So you started the first podcast. You said you did the tech podcast, very short, sort of very focused on text. So when you were doing that podcast, something must have clicked in your mind. Hang on a minute. This is something that could grow. This is something we could add to. How did that moment come about?
I mean, the one maxim is podcast like no one's listening. Be yourself. Do what you're doing. Do your own passion. And if people are interested in that passion, you'll get a kindred spirit will come along and they'll help you. And that's kind of what happened with me. I started doing The Daily Show, and I was just throwing it out into the ether. And after 2 weeks, I'd not had an email, I'd not had any level of feedback. No one had put anything on Twitter, or, you know, it was just static in the background. And then a girl named Amber, who did a show called Net at Night with Leo Laporte, made us her podcast of the week. And picked us up and said, it's a 3-minute daily next year. This guy, Ewan Rankin, gets up early in the morning and does it. I was there at 5 a.m. filtering through the tech stories, making the podcast and posting it before I went to work. And Amber Michaels just said, it's a great podcast. Everyone should listen. And Leo Laporte was broadcasting to 500,000 listeners there. And all of a sudden, it just snowballed from there. And that's when it then, you know, that like I said, the ether had spoken back to me. So that gave me enough drive to keep going. And then it was an idea of, well, I want to do a panel show. Well, I want to do a Mac show that's Mac focused and then general tech focused. And then other people brought their podcasts to the network. And at a peak, we had something like 14 podcasts running, 200,000 downloads a week of the podcasts. And people sniffing around for a bit of sponsorship that we didn't get.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to go from, you know, one small show all the way up to 14 shows, in terms of the impact of your time available in your daily life, that's quite considerably different.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I did, I was only doing the Daily Show, which I got up at 5 o'clock for. I always had it done by 8 o'clock, and then I was out the door. The Big Show was always in the evening on a Thursday, and the Max Show was always in the afternoon on a Friday, because it was, you know, we could have a beer and relax because it was the week was over. And those were my total involvement really for a while. I did a photo show for myself, but the irony of being a photographer and not actually doing much of a photo show was quite unrealistic. And then you came along and you wanted to do a show about comic books, which I participated in the first one, but then I let you guys to run with it. Jeff Gamet was a great asset that came to the network. Patrice Brendamore came and started running all the tech stuff behind, as well as being a pundit on the shows. Very knowledgeable lady. And we picked up people. Andy Anatko was an amazing contributor.
He's a professional journalist, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a professional tech journalist, and he brought like 120,000 listeners with him. Yeah.
I think it's Chicago Sometimes. Yeah, right, proper national newspaper in America. Yeah, yeah. Column in Mac World magazine. You know, a man that literally got invited. He was the one that got the invites to the WWDC and to Apple's press conferences, wasn't he? So he was a... How did you contact him? How did that happen?
I reached out to him on Twitter. Andy, do you want to come on my podcast? Yeah, all right.
That's how it's done, I suppose, isn't it? You don't ask, you don't get.
I mean, we had some big names on. There was a guy called Leo Laporte who was doing stuff, and I ended up doing a podcast with him a couple of times. And that was great exposure. There was Tom Merritt, who was at CNET, and I knew him at CNET with Amber Michaels and with, I can't remember the name of the lady, but she went on to work for the New York Times. as their tech writer. And he came on a lot of podcasts and was a really kind supporter. Jason Howell came on a few times, who was also part of the Twit network. And then we had a lot of Americans that would come on and do shows with us. Carrie Holtzman had a really big following. He asked me, on the back of me doing the podcast and him coming on the big show, he then had me in to be the photography expert on the Computer America radio show. So I used to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to do that. And it was great fun. I really enjoyed it. It was a good time in my life. I was happy doing it. I enjoyed it. And you make time. I look back now and think, my God, why did I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning? Why did I find the time to do all of that stuff? But you do.
Yeah, as it's a, you know, it's a hobby to sort of like mini home cottage industry thing, isn't it?
And I think that's the thing is with podcasting, it was great in 2008 when we started. We had Will Green, who had started British Mac the year before. We had Adam on, who'd started a Mac podcast in the States in 2006. So we had some of the real original operators. And because it was based on RSS feeds, the big networks hadn't got into it. Adam Curry had come up with this idea, and then all of a sudden, the average person could post a show that they wanted. And we made a show that we wanted to make and stuff everyone who didn't want us to make it, which got us into a bit of trouble sometimes. But we were happy having a chat with our mates and not worrying about who was watching.
So that's the podcast like nobody's
podcast
listening.
Like no one's listening. And then people liked that format and liked listening. And
yeah, the weirdest, I think the weirdest thing after I just started being Dr. Happy Mac was just being, I think I went to an EV show with some people and we were in a queue to get in, and there's thousands of people just queuing at this show at Birmingham somewhere, middle of, well, NEC. Massive queue of people. I'm just out there chatting to my friend about waiting for the queue to go along, talking, and suddenly this voice behind goes, excuse me. He's like, yes, it's a, I know you. I was like, no, I know, don't know Birmingham, don't live in Birmingham. Had a chat, he went, but your voice is so familiar. And I was like, oh, it's just Mac podcast. I was like, hang on, what? I'm just standing in a queue in Birmingham and this person's gone, I know your voice from the podcast. And
I was like, I had that at Victoria Station, stood in the Costa Coffee, talking to Steve Neighbour, who's another guy who came on the podcast. And guy just turned around and went, I know that voice. And it was like, nice to meet you, nice to meet you.
Yeah, and it's people that have gone beyond that. I think there's lots of names you've talked about there that I remember the names of, and you know, faces pop back in. But people that, you know, you still, some have gone on to do different things and new things, but some of them that are, you know, still around. I mean, I talked to you earlier about Paul Clark. You know, he came on, he talked to us, he did the comics podcast with me and Kelly.
Very talented artist. I remember him, he used to come on, he came up to the studio a few times and he had a projector that was interactive that he could draw on, and he was drawing on my wall. But he was drawing on the projector on the wall. It was really cool. And that was like a live demo. We had, when Oculus Rift first came out, we had a guy who came up with two Oculus Rift to the bash that we had, the live party where listeners were invited. And everyone was using an Oculus Rift and none of them were available on the market. They were only out for devs. So we had some real firsts, some real good stuff. We did a live broadcast from Victoria Station when they put the internet, Virgin Internet, in for the first day. I happened to be in London. I rang Tom Merritt and said, I'm going to be in, do you want a live broadcast? And he was like, oh yeah, great. So I used the internet to broadcast myself walking up and down the platform, you know, 60 feet under the ground.
And we did the WWDC podcast from the pubs in London, didn't we? Do you remember we did a couple of those? They were fun.
Whenever there was a keynote, we used to do stuff there through the London Mac user group, which was run by Steve Neighbour. And then I got asked to go out and be a guest speaker at the last Macworld. So I did two talks on photography out there.
I mean, it's basically, it's a case of doing what you love, with no expectation, just throwing it out and then taking what comes back and running with it, but being open to sort of like when things happen, being open to just grab them and do it, and not, rather than saying, well, that's,
I think the thing with us was the passion was obvious and the friendship was obvious. I mean, some of the Mac shows, you'd have Will Green on, and he always played the fool, but he actually was far more intelligent than he would make out. Mm. But he'd kick us off some rat hole about the Paul Daniels magic show that used to be on when we were kids. You know, we'd go some serious rat holes, but people enjoyed that. It was just like, you know, it's because they were eavesdropping on four mates, five mates,
yes,
having a good time.
Yeah.
We always podcasted like we were down the pub with four or five beers in front of us, and we were just chewing the cud.
Yeah.
It wasn't about trying to hit. I mean, I would try and keep us on track and try and get stories in for us to talk about. But but it was never that serious. If we got the stories in, we got the stories in. If we ran to an hour, we ran to an hour. If we went to an hour and a half, so what? It didn't matter.
So what's the biggest thing in tech now then? If we were doing a tech podcast today, what would be the biggest thing in tech now?
The big problem with podcasting now is it's still egalitarian. It's still out there for people to do what they want and throw their podcast into the void. But the ability to grow is hard now. Mm. I mean, we peaked with Max Show at around, we had a few episodes that went out at 120,000 when Andy was on. But the average listenership was around 30,000
Which sounds substantial, but in global terms is, and in British
it's nothing now. But we also then had, We appeared high in the charts because there wasn't as many podcasts, and ours was a good podcast that people like listening to, so it came up. Now you're talking about conglomerates taking over podcasting, and because of the star level that they've got on those podcasts that are getting paid good money to be there, and the money's got to be returned through advertising.
Hang on a minute. Do you mean people are paid for this stuff? You never paid us for this stuff.
No, I never made any money doing it, that's why. It was always, like I said, it was always a passion thing, and if people wanted to listen, they wanted to listen. We didn't change ourselves. We lost a sponsorship deal with Asda.
Yes.
Because they wrote to us saying, we want some tech, you're a British tech show, we love it, and we want to get involved with you. And then we published one of the most inappropriate episodes we ever had, because Will Green took us off down a rat hole, and there was a guy called Don McAllister who had a proper serious Mac business, and he said, why don't you change what you do? You know, well, then we're not us, are we? It's our podcast. We want to do it. I want to have fun doing it with my friends. If people want to watch, have a look. If you don't, just move along.
Yes, even to the extent of, like, you know, not consciously sabotaging, but, I mean, a lot of people would have felt...
They'd have found us out at some point. It was just sooner rather than later.
But a lot of people would look back on losing a sponsorship deal with Asda and potential things. They'd look back at that.
There was no numbers in that. It was just, you know, a marketing company going, oh, this is a great idea, we want to invest in Britain, etc. At some point, they'd have found us out before we got there.
Yeah.
So I don't think it ever would have happened.
No. I mean, it's quite a substantial body of work. I mean, how many episodes in total do
we have
think?
Got every single episode of every single show we've done in audio, and it's 800 gig.
Mm.
So there's thousands and thousands of shows, and we've kept all of them.
What you're saying is that all of the Dr. Happy Mac contributions are still out there on a server.
If any
somewhere.
Of you want some of the more embarrassing moments of him, just let me know and I'll send you the link.
Yes. I think I was mostly sober for most of the podcasts. So
yeah, you didn't
drink
much.
No, I never have done.
Yeah.
I managed the one where I created a touchscreen Mac by ripping a laptop screen apart and hammering it back into place upside down. Was done without the benefit of alcohol whatsoever. Yeah. No. So, I mean, if you were comparing that kind of almost sort of punky, pirate, gung-ho, scrappy British nature... I mean, at the time when we were doing that, podcasting was massive in the States. You said Leo Laporte and his massive reach.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
huge
he had a £1 million studio at one point.
Yeah. Why the difference? What were the Americans doing that was working for them that was not happening in the UK?
I think there was a thing with a guy once put on one of the reviews that Americans' podcasts about tech are more entertaining. And I'm not going to disagree with him entirely, but that's the difference. Was our podcast wasn't about the tech; it was about us having fun. And I think that's where the British humour style differentiates and goes away. But it is a more niche.
But nobody was running a podcast network of the scale that the Americans were at that point.
Not at all.
No.
I mean, we were probably one of the biggest British podcasts for technology at the time.
Mm.
And then other, you know, the BBC started getting in. Then once the BBC started getting in, we just slipped further and further down the rankings.
So what impact do you think on independent podcasting and these kind of like small startups and things? What do you think the involvement of companies like Gary Lineker and Goalhanger and stuff, who obviously their podcast network is growing, expanding, you know, hoovering up big names, big sponsorship.
a podcast entertainment. So it's got to be entertaining, and that's the long and the short of it. And if people find it entertaining enough, the word will pass around and the referral process will start, and you'll get more and more listeners. Mm. If people don't find it entertaining, then they move along. And that's the key part. It doesn't matter how much money you chuck at it. The thing that's nice, I think, about some of the big podcasts, the production value's there, the lighting's good, the audio's great, the video stuff is simple, setups of three or four cameras and that's it, and then it's post-edited before it goes out.
Post-edited before it goes out?
Well, and then it is a...
That's a new editing spool. I don't think we'd... Not much editing got done at our end.
One of the jokes I always had on the podcast was if someone made an error or swore, I always said, don't worry, I can edit. And the joke was I never edited.
No.
Everything just went out
as
it was.
Everything went out, yeah.
But we realised that if we had an explicit tag on the podcast, we lost a lot of listeners. Mm. So I had to end up then going through the podcast. And a guy called Andy Vaughan, who was a developer who listened to the show, actually wrote an app for me for my iPhone. And it was called the Green Counter.
So, oh, I remember the green counter, yes.
And so we'd start the podcast, and at the same time, I'd start the green counter simultaneously. And every time Will Green swore, I'd just poke him in the face on the app.
Yes.
And it would log the time, and then it would spit out a whole load of time code so I can go and find the swear points rather than having to listen to the whole thing.
Yeah.
To try and find them. That was the sum total of edits that I ever did, though. I never cut anything else out. It was just, you know, start the feed, we go. If it's funny, it stays. And if it's not funny, we won't post it.
Yeah, it is different now. Yeah, I suppose for all of these networks now, once the money comes in, once you're paying people, there's professionalism, you've got sponsors to approve, then it really does, you know, the freedom to do what you want just kind of goes.
Yeah, we had that. We could say and do what, and we didn't do anything that was wholly inappropriate or anything like that, but no one could pick a fault with us, but we weren't looking for big corporate sponsorship ever.
No.
We used to get, listeners might send in a few quid here and there, and we'd put it into tech to make, you know, better mics, roving mics, better sound cards, that kind of stuff. But it was never a business for us.
No. I mean, given the new state of podcasting and the new sort of like impetus to monetize, to develop, to push out and things, I'm going to seek us seamlessly into section two now of the podcast here, because what we've done is I've asked the students previously to think about ideas for possible podcasts. And I thought we'd get some of those students to sit in, talk about their ideas.
Yeah, cool.
And maybe get some input from yourself as to the viability of the idea, whether it would suit the old style of podcasting where you just do it because you love it, or whether there's a gem of a commercial gold mine sitting there uncovered. And we'll see. Hopefully, maybe we can infuse someone with the spirit to get going.
Yeah, good. That'd be right.
Yeah. Okay. So first off, over here in podcast or not... is Kit. So tell us about the idea that it wasn't just you that came up with the idea, was it?
Yes, so I was working on this idea with Emmy. So it was going to be more an audio drama sort of anthology style podcast, because there's actually quite a few which I've been listening to which are out at the moment. And basically it was going to be set on a spaceship where the whole crew has died, but the ship's computer is telling their stories, and it sort of turns out that like strange things each happen to every crew member up until their mysterious death on the spaceship. And so it was sort of going to be like a story, like an episode type situation. It was quite inspired by podcasts like Welcome to Night Vale or The Magnus Archives was a big one, but yeah.
Okay.
I love that.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. You're good.
Straight away, it's like when you started, it's an anthology
high bar
podcast.
Fellas.
Yeah. And I was like, sort of, oh, okay. And then it's like, oh, spaceship, everyone's dead. I'm like, okay, I'm in. I'll listen to that.
Yeah.
And then the mystery element as well. So was it individual sort of anthologies, story, or was there going to be an overall arc?
I was thinking that there would be sort of an overall arc sort of happening in the background throughout like a series of episodes. So you'd have the main story, which is sort of pretty singular in each episode, but then in the overall story of the spaceship, maybe strange things would start happening there, like someone finds the ship or just things get discovered, and sort of like a big overall plot happening.
I was going to say, you've got to have that story arc mapped out before you begin, haven't you? Otherwise, it's going to get... It goes to, like, if you can always tell, like, a successful season comes out in the US, and then season two, there's loads of flashbacks because they're like, well, we never thought we were going to get to the second season, so we've got to write stories now from before. And as soon as I start seeing flashbacks on those kind of things, I'm like, I'm done. So you've got to have that arc planned out before you begin. But that sounds an amazing podcast. I'd listen to that.
I mean, generationally, you remember Lost. You remember on TV?
I hated Lost. I thought it was the worst thing ever made.
I know, but...
As soon as the tree started shaking in episode one, I'm done. And I was right to be done.
But now, looking back at what is Lost most famous for?
Bad writing.
Well, yes, but also just having no idea how they were
where it was going,
Yeah, and literally just running out to the end again. This is everyone, the whole of the country or America and things, looking at this episode going, they're going to tell us what's happening. They're going to unpick the mystery. And
well, you guys won't remember it. There was a show called Dallas, and one of the key characters died. And then, like, two seasons later, it turns out his wife had had a dream about all of the things that happened in Dallas for the last two seasons, and he was alive in the shower.
And he stepped out and he went, I've just had the strangest dream. Yeah. And all the audience went, we're out.
Yeah, yes. And that killed it.
It did, yeah. So what was the idea of the spaceship thing? Is that... You mentioned a couple of like other podcasts that inspired you. Was that the natural interest in that kind of thing?
Well, with the podcast that inspired it, that was more for the actual like mystery horror side of like the individual stories, especially the Magnus Archives. And I guess I'm, with regards to the spaceship premise, I'm quite a big sci-fi enjoyer, so it was just something that interested me, and I guess it was a bit of inspiration from Red
Dwarf.
Can
say nerd on a podcast.
Are you going to read it as a script and a narrative, or are you going to act out each part of each character?
It would be like acted out, but because it's like just the ship's computer reading it out, it would be more, a lot of the episodes, I guess, would be one-handers. You'd only need like one person speaking in it. But then more people could be brought in as like the overarching story unfolds, which is pretty similar.
You've also got you can layer that very well because you've got a ton of free sound effects out there for spaceship background and that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
So that's easy to make that sound like a multi-layered high production project. I love it.
It's good, isn't it?
Go for it.
And even halfway through, if you changed your mind, you could go anywhere you wanted to go at any point without kind of letting on. As long as you could write it and plot it and things.
Yeah.
And technology-wise, it's easy. Easy, as you said, it's easy to do and easy to make sound really good and really professional.
Yeah.
I mean, you could essentially end up with a product that audibly is very little different from a proper BBC show or something, just because the technology is there to do it.
Yeah.
So. Just use ring lighting for the screen that they're talking into, they're telling the story to in the first person. It's all stuff to camera. It's easily done in terms of production.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Well, I think you've convinced us that that's a good idea, and definitely doable in the kind of current environment of just get it done and see who's.
I was
going
to say, don't talk about it. Do it because it sounds great. Get started.
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. Well, thanks very much, Kit. That's I think a positive start for the first segment of podcast.
Like I said, chaps, high bar.
Or not, but yeah, we'll see where else we're going on this. So, thank you very much. Definitely. Very creative.
Like I said, it's that ability to layer that very easily with sound effects that are freely available.
Yeah.
And make something that's got really good high production value is right there.
And also I think audio, there's a history of audio broadcasting and things on the BBC and things like Quatermass, things like Doctor Who audio episodes and things like that, which have there's an inbuilt following for that podcast.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know if Kit's going to tell the story, but if you think about the pieces to camera that Damon does in The Martian for when he's talking and leaving his video diary, that video diary format is easily replicated, and it's, again, high production value is easily made with an authenticity to it. And if the acting's good, the fear will come through the camera. Really good.
Well, I'm going to make it, I would listen.
Well, I want the first episode.
Listening
please,
test, yeah. First episode is go. But hopefully.
Love it.
Yeah. Right, so next up, Cam is going to unveil the podcast that you were thinking about. So, Cam, do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, first, thank you for having me on.
That's great. So basically, I've always had quite a strong passion for music and a lot of things similar. So I basically want to create a music podcast, basically just talking about like current music things that are happening, like what's in the charts, what's being released, and also like past things in music. So maybe like rating and giving opinions on like older like bits of music and stuff like that. And I also want to provide a platform for kind of promoting kind of local music as well, and local bands and events, because it's really hard to try and find like maybe like events near you or something like that for music events. It's really hard. It's quite, they're quite niche places. So if you can provide like a easily accessible platform for that, I think it'd be great.
That'd be great in terms of getting guests on as well. It's going to be easy to get bands who want to come on and promote themselves if you've got a following, particularly if it's a local following around this area.
That
could be really cool.
Yeah, because a lot of content. I mean, you obviously, with all of the podcasts that you had and all of the guests coming in, it's getting the people to commit to come on, getting the people to make the content that you're going to put out.
And your format is really good because it's literally, there is a need for that.
Yeah.
And obviously in business, it's like if you fulfill a need or there is a need there, you know, build it and they will come, as they say.
You're living in an area as well where there's a celebrity-rich environment for musicians
there's so many people around.
You know, through word of mouth you could start to get some serious contenders on the podcast as well to help with expanding it. So you know, and just to do a word of mouth referral there, so it's like I've got this, do you know any celebrity musicians in the local area? And if you're just this guy who's doing it for his passion and you're not making money off it, you'll get big celebs will come on easily because they know you're not taking them for a ride.
That's an odd thing, isn't it? That if you're already commercial, people expect a quid pro quo exchange for that. But if you're avowedly not commercial, if it's you and your passion, again, this is the same thing. If you're podcasting, if you're putting it out there for yourself and for your joy and your passion,
then people will respond to that. You know,
I've definitely found that it does work. It seems odd, but it does work.
Yeah.
Are you going to try and deal with a lot of musical taste there, or are you going for a definite? Because that's where you'll start to struggle to get listenership.
Yeah, I was thinking if I deal with like a quite broad like genre of music, it'd be quite hard to retain like a concurrent listener base. So I think if I just start off maybe try and do just local events and music, and then see what ends up being kind of more popular, I can kind of go more into like a more niche area and kind of try and keep a fan base.
So what's your passion in the music? So obviously it's your idea and things, and you said you came from the interest, but what's your particular passion in music?
Well I've always just loved like listening to music and playing music, and I find it's so hard at the moment to kind of get like any sort of followership like in like the media business or the music business. So if I can try and help people get kind of promotion or anything of the sort, I think it'd be great.
So as somebody that you've noticed the need, it's like, wouldn't it be good?
That's kind of the genesis for so many things, isn't it? Mm. Wouldn't it be good if? And then you go, well, someone's got to do it.
You're at the point that I was saying when I started doing the news show, is that you've just got to throw it out in the void and just see who comes back at you.
Yeah.
And you know you've made it when you start getting hate emails.
Oh, yeah.
I used to get, and there'd just be one word on it, which wasn't a very good word.
Yeah.
And that was it. That was the title of the email. They'd never put any content in. and it was just like, I've made it. Yeah. I've got hate mail.
Nice. Yeah.
People hate us so much.
And music
they
is so divisive.
Yeah.
You'll get hate mail quickly. So I think you'll be successful there. Yeah.
Mm. Don't take it to heart, though. They're only idiots. The world is full of idiots. They just,
those that talk don't do.
Let's get that.
So what sort of like format? Tell us about the format. How would you see the format?
I was hopefully planning to kind of have it as, I think some of the episodes, it might be just me on more maybe when I'm promoting kind of events and stuff. But then on the other ones, kind of want to have like a kind of a two-person kind of format where we're like having a conversation about a certain thing in music, like a certain album and just maybe voice our opinions on it.
Mm-hmm.
And try and give like people good like recommendations on kind of lesser known music.
Yeah. Have you got something like a Zoom 4 type audio capture? Because those are great to carry around and just
I've seen those.
Get audio off someone at a festival or something like that, and just back it off with a couple of B-roll really images or something.
You might get free entry into festivals. Maybe it'll blag some free entry passes as a journalist. Yeah.
I've got a connection I can give you afterwards. He'll get you into a few. He does all the printing for them.
Ah, okay. There you go. That's the other thing it's about, you know, we talked about it earlier in like in our discussions and things, is the way people do, you know, will pitch in and help, that, you know, you put it out there, this, you know, people donate kits, people donate time, people give up their Saturday mornings, their Friday afternoons, their Thursdays and things to do it because they want to join you on that journey, basically.
Yeah.
And if you are yourself and, you know, you do that and you're passionate with it, then people will want to do that because they'll enjoy it as well.
Yeah.
And they're so, you know, so hard to find something, you know, just purely enjoyable that people will, you ask, people will help. You ask for, you know, will you help me, support me, do this, will you come on? People will often say yes.
Yeah.
But no, and even if they say no, it's, you know, nothing's gone wrong. You've just, someone's just said no.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it just like a whole long thing, or do you envisage just doing seasons of it?
I was envisaging kind of just doing it as I go, really. Mm. Maybe doing seasons. Not too sure how long each episode will be or how long a season will be, but at least. And I try and get.
Yeah, I mean, you're a lot more fluid than Kit's podcast. I was saying, she's going to have to create a story arc right from the start, whereas you can make it up week by week and no one's going to be bothered.
Yeah.
The only thing I think is music's an evocative and emotional subject, and the genre definitions and splits within it, you know, to go from classical through to, you know, raging punk, etc., from the 70s. Yeah. That's.
We
that's,
don't know much about modern music. I think that's fair.
You speak for yourself. I think that's where you've like got to stay true to your message. You've got to stay true to the genre that you pick. Because if you start trying to be all things to all people, you'll be nothing to no one.
Mm.
So be focused on that and make sure you dive into it.
Yeah. Again, it's a very good idea.
It is.
I mean, I think that it's like it's
because it's what you want to do.
Yeah.
It's clearly obviously the way that you've spoken, so you can't go wrong. And like I said, broadcast like no one's listening.
Yeah. I think it's one of the, it's still, although, you know, we have said it's difficult with Goal Hanger, the BBC commercialisation pushing in, and it isn't the democratic medium that it was when you started in terms of what you could do. And it still is, you know, there's no force on earth that can stop you from setting up a microphone, connecting it to a computer, recording what you want to record, and then putting it out on the internet.
Yeah.
There is no regulation. There is no oversight, nobody telling you not to do it. So
it's so accessible now as well. It's just way more easy to do now. And then also, I find a lot, like, quite a problem with that is there's quite a larger audience for that kind of content now, but it's so oversaturated, in which it's kind of hard to grow from that.
Yes, and I think also the thing is to be flexible about your, if you get feedback, if you start getting feedback from people that say things that chime with you, and that you feel that you want
part.
To.
Don't react to every piece of feedback. No. Look at the stuff that's consistently being fed back to you.
Yeah, okay. And if it's stuff that fits with what you want, you know, if you're getting consistent feedback that says, no, you should be doing this, this, and this, but you don't want to do that, it's not the show you want to make, then you don't have to take that on board.
Mm.
I mean, I think you're living proof of that. You ploughed exactly, you know, it went how you wanted it to go.
Yeah,
didn't it?
You know, I've got a lot of mates from podcasting. There's a lot of listeners who reach out to me regularly, and a lot of them are just like, I don't think you're going to reply, but I'm sending this in, and I always reply to everyone.
Mm.
And they love that. And we're still, we're not at the levels that we used to be, because I drew away from the podcast for a while. I'm coming back now. The shows didn't happen every single week all the time. But I want to put that right again now and get back into it. But it's got to be, like I said, our ethos was always, we're mates down the pub. If you want to listen and eavesdrop, you can.
Mm.
If you don't, move along, leave us to it.
Yeah.
Don't tell us we're wrong, though.
Yeah, but yours, that kind of vibe going on. I'm conscious that over 50 years, I'm not actually allowed to say the word vibe. It sets the students' teeth on edge. If anyone of my age says the word vibe, they start, you can see them shaking. So, but anyway... yeah, but as long as it fits with you and it is your voice and your authentic voice, then you know, I think definitely doable.
Cool.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, thanks, Cam.
Well, okay.
Good job, and really lucidly explained. I thought you got, that's really interesting how clearly you had in your mind what it could do and why it would do it and things, which is really important if you're going to push, you know, and keep doing stuff. Fantastic.
Yeah,
okay,
thank you very
brilliant.
Much.
No worries. So, still a high bar.
Yeah, music's a tough subject, so there's kudos there for taking that one on.
It is. Yeah. I mean, there isn't a lack of sort of competition in that sphere from a lot of people.
No.
But I think if you've
got... I think the locality as well would come, like I said, you do it for this region, and then you've got people in this region who want to follow the type of music that you want to talk about will start to come along and bring other people there.
Yes,
to you.
So it's plugging into the local scene.
It works really well as a you know, a generative growth that's sustainable.
Yes, yeah. Mm. I think once you've got well known in the local scene, everyone in the local scene is supporting your idea, helping you push it forward.
And you've got bands throwing you, please promote us this week. Yeah, and you can do a what's on section each time. I really love that.
It's and great. Then kind of step your circle of influence to step it out.
Yeah, yeah.
As you get bigger and bigger. Yeah, very good. Yes, very, very good. So thirdly, and finally, we've got Theo, who's come to talk to us about the idea that you, was it just you or were you working with somebody?
So it's two people from our class. You probably know this because we've had a talk about this before. Mm-hmm. It's me, Jude and Aaron. We want to start a podcast about cars because you've definitely overheard in class. All we talk about is cars. And I like... For me, it's been my life passion. Mm-hmm. On like from young, from like 2, 3, dad's been into cars his whole life. Got me into cars, so
that's a great start.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So cars, it is a big subject.
Yeah, that's why I chose it, to be honest, because it's the variety is. You can go from like one episode of I was thinking an idea of budget cars, like first cars, especially for an audience like us, where we're 17. 16, 17, we're learning how to drive. Our audience would be trying to get into cars, trying to learn how to drive, so we would recommend what's the best car, not only like for beginners but maintenance as well. Maintaining a car is very important, making sure it drives well, making sure you understand how your car like drives, how to drive it properly. So that would be one episode, and then I've got other episodes of just the motorsport side of it as well. Because I don't know about the exact dates of it, but coming up is the 24-hour of Nürburgring race. We could do a review on that and see top moments of it. We could try get some drivers on and just see what happens.
Don't ask, you don't get.
Yeah, just the main thing I've noticed with podcasts is like the reach that you have is just endless. You can, as long as you're willing to just be confident and go out there and talk, then... you can do like anything that you want. So
yeah, and I think it's like just when you sat down and you started talking about why you want to do this podcast, and literally like the first 2 or 3 minutes was about how much you love cars. It's like, oh, I really love cars. Cars are my passion. Cars are my life. It's like, well, that's your wellspring of enthusiasm to draw.
So one of the things that I did with the photo show is I realized that I knew so much about photography and could talk so much about stuff that I would end up being boring.
Yeah.
So I developed it as a magazine show, and I think that's what you've got to do, because you've got a big topic there.
Yeah.
And you've got a lot of information that you clearly know, you're a knowledgeable bloke, and you could sit and spout that forever.
Yeah.
And A, set yourself a time limit. B, do it sectionally. So driving standards, maintenance, purchasing, selling, that kind of stuff, whatever it is associated with your car.
And I think
stick it into a set format, and people will love that format as well, because they can dip in and dip out of each section. Because I said, when I did the photography podcast, I realised that if I sat down and started to talk about photography, I would just meander. And I'd be talking about what I wanted to talk about. And people would be going, well, it was a lot of information, but I couldn't pick out the bit of information that I wanted. And that's going to be your problem there as well.
Mm. I think when we did the comics podcast, we took that from your sort of formatting. We knew there's four of us and we were all massive, massive comics nerds. And we knew that we would just sit there and we would talk about comics and talk and talk, and it would just go on and it would have no structure and things, which is why we introduced like all of the different things. So we every week everybody had to bring a comic that we'd read that we wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
And then we had the artist thing, Are They Better Than Dave Gibbons segment, which was relentlessly cruel to poor Dave Gibbons, who is one of the UK's greatest comic artists, but we were horrible about him every week. That gave us a format that we could go to and then structure the whole podcast around.
Yeah, my photo podcast was news, gear, questions. And that was it.
And I think you've hit upon, rather than topics for podcasts, you've hit upon segments for your podcast.
Yeah.
So, every week, maintenance about a certain thing. Every week, things about.
It's got to have that magazine format, definitely. Yeah. Otherwise, I think you'll struggle.
The other things I was thinking as well is, based on our first episode, we could do what our audience wants based on feedback. So say if we post on YouTube and loads of comments are like, oh, can you review this car? Or can you like talk about the maintenance of this type of brand car? Then we could, next episode, like have a 30-minute segment on that or like a 10-minute segment on that.
Yeah, so that's your question section.
Yeah,
I agree with that. But I think the thing to remember is it's your podcast, it's your passion. And if you make sure that you keep that at the core.
Okay.
So let people participate. And interact with them. So the people used to love sending in questions and getting answers from me because it was a bit of a no-nonsense style answer in a lot of cases. And they loved that they could interact with the show, but it was still my show. Yeah. So I did the news stories I wanted to do. I did the gear stuff that I wanted to do, and then I'd let them come in through the questions. So have a section that's for question and answers.
Because you said it was you and Jude.
And Aaron.
Because you've all three of you. Again, I can tell from teaching them. All three of them have the same car passion.
No, that's not lacking. That's obvious, yeah.
But also, they've all got three quite different kind of voices and three different skill sets.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. With Jude and Aaron, they're more into their, like, specs of the car. They know, like, every single thing about the car. Whereas me, I'm more into kind of, like, the driving style of it. I'm more into kind of, like, the racing side of it. Because I know with you, you're a rally driver, so...
Yes, I have done in the past. Yeah, little bits and bobs.
To me, like, especially with an episode on that, I just... Rally drivers, to me, the most talented drivers that you could ever meet.
Apart from me.
The reaction times and stuff that they know is just unhuman. But I just love, like, the way just to drive cars.
To be honest, I think
right there, then, you've got your three presenters for your sections of your magazine. Yeah. You've laid out the entire plan almost in those few sentences.
Yeah. And also you've got elements like, you know, Aaron's very keen on the car videography, the car photography and things like that. So he can talk about that sort of thing as well. Jude, and I've spoken to Jude about this. Listen, Jude has he's really interesting because he's got a really, I think you probably agree, a really particular voice when he talks about things. When you do the spotlight segment and Jude was doing like meme of the week and things, he's one of those people who just has a character that works on, you know, it comes over. Yeah. Really
it's
well.
It's very like, he's a very presentable.
Oh God, yes, yeah. I mean, he's. It's not really about, you know, the camera loving you, all those things. He's just got this. There's something in his personality that clicks when he's talking about things.
Yeah.
And he's got a very unique and quite humorous, but very Jude humorous.
And you've got to keep that. I mean, that's the one thing that people always said to me. Because like, I'd go down to London and say I'm in London. Any listeners want to join me and have a beer? And you used to get a few would pop out. And they were kind of like, you're just like you are on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm not trying to be a presenter. I'm just me. You know, I'm just being me. And I'm the same guy down the pub as I am on the podcast because I'm just having a beer with my mates on the show. And that authenticity will always come through. So you need to be yourself. Don't be a presenter.
Yeah.
Keep your passion. Yeah. Be yourself. And people will like you. And if they don't like you, that's life. People don't like everyone. Live with it. It's fine.
I mean, you're very... distinct, you and Aaron and Jude, you've got very distinct personalities, and I think that if you were going to do that, you would need to structure it so that you each owned your segments, so that people were tuning in as much to, you know, to talk about or listen to what you want to talk about. But it really, there is a lot of choice in car podcasting. There's a lot of stuff out there, but people are principally, they're tuning into this person to find out what this person says about it because they like and respect that person.
Well, in a way as well, the audience could kind of get familiar with us. So like I was saying, those two both know the specs of the cars. It could be like Jude could cover the specs, Aaron could cover like what's coming out, and I could cover like the motorsport side of it. So our audience would be like, after like I don't know if I'd do it in seasons or I would just do episodes, but after like maybe like five episodes, the audience would kind of like pick up kind of like a rhythm of it and understand that I would talk about the motorsport side. Yeah. Jude will talk about the spec side.
There's a website called Car Events, because my daughter likes going to like classic car shows and things. The Car Events website that she uses, they'll tell you what's going on in each area by you each weekend. And through the summer, there'll be like coffee evenings where they'll turn up to coffee houses and or pubs and have a coffee. And then there's a bike one. And you've got an opportunity then to get out, talk to people as well, get interest from external, do some interviews. Yeah.
there's kind of endless content generation.
People
from
that
those
take
meets.
Their car to a car show want nothing more than people to ask them a question about their car.
Absolutely, so. Yeah, very much so. But I mean, there is. I think the other angle is that if you look at a lot of the really big podcasts on YouTube and things like Harry's Garage and things like that, they're ex-car journalists, ex-car presenters that have gone into podcasting. They are kind of our age. Mm. They're of our age. And we like, or I like watching Harry's Garage and things and stuff like that. But they're talking to us. And then you've kind of got the nonsense youth car podcastings where it's all too bling, it's all too stupid, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, that I think there's something there in terms of the youth of you three, but marrying that to professional content.
I think podcasting to your own age is a far easier thing as well. When I started BTN, I was expecting people my age who had a passing tech knowledge or influence to want to watch it. And when you look at it, that they were males generally. We only had about 10% female listeners.
Yeah.
And we tried hard to get females on the podcast, but there was not that many who were into tech. We had a few that came on. Sarah Gray came on. She was a programmer. She was on every week. Podcasting to your own age makes more sense because that's where your growth will come from. And also then at your age, there'll be people that'll stay with you for the longer term of as well. But so I would focus on not trying to copy something that's oriented at someone older. Try and speak to your age group about the things that they're bothered about.
Yeah.
And you'll get more.
It's because our age group is just, they're starting to drive. So I feel like just giving tips on even just how to drive on like public roads or just how to do stuff. I just want people to listen to this podcast and be able to learn about cars. I want someone to be able to like not know anything about cars, start listening and then actually pick up like key information about cars. And I want the podcast to be like factual. I kind of want the older, I was thinking about this, I kind of want a mix of a young and old audience because I want the old audience, they know about cars and they can kind of listen to it and be like, it's factual, like that what they're saying is actually true about cars.
I mean, I thought that Cam had the topic that was going to be the most contentious, but if you're going to do things on tips for driving, you're going to get a lot of hate.
Yeah, especially a young teenager saying, hey, Grandad.
I'd check what you do before you put it out.
That's not how your handbrake turning has to car park.
Yep, no, highway code doesn't say that, mate.
No.
They'll be fast to reply.
Oh, brilliant. Well, thanks a lot for that, Theo. Well done.
No, thank you guys for
again,
having me.
I think second Good. Bit where you asked a question and you answering it, that you started talking about, I want the podcast to do this. I think you immediately think, oh, there's someone that really wants to do that idea.
Like I said, for all three of you, if you've got a vision about what you want to do, follow your vision, follow your heart, don't listen to anyone else, make the podcast you want to make, and then you can't go wrong. But if you start trying to make the podcast that you think everyone else wants, you'll get no one who wants to listen to it.
You've just got to be yourself.
You've just got to get a kindred spirit. Like I said, you know, we podcasted it, we threw it out there, no one fed back, and then all of a sudden, people who were like me or who wanted to listen to me started listening, and you'd start getting some people would leave reviews going, this is boring. Well, okay, it's not, move on.
Yeah.
There's an audience out there for all three of the ideas.
98% positive feedback as opposed to 2% negative feedback. Ignore the haters.
Yeah.
Always. Never give them air as well. Don't mention haters on air. Let them slide by. Go on. You've had your 15 minutes. Sod off.
You're doing it for your enjoyment. You're doing it for
definitely.
You. Yeah. So you don't want to bring any of that negativity in.
You've all got the passion. You've all know what you want to do. Just get on and do it.
Yeah. Get on and do it.
Make what you want to make.
Yeah. I think that would be from this sort of investigation of the ideas and things. I would think if just do it, just get some headphones on, get a microphone on.
I got fed up of waiting for Mark, so I pulled out a microphone, plugged it into my computer, and I recorded the first episode on, I think it was the 8th of July, 7th of July.
Yeah, and at the moment as well, I mean, obviously you've got lessons and things, but you've got this golden opportunity that round the corner there's a sound recording booth. You can sit there with the headphones on, you know, proper quality mics, quality sound, deadening, really nice sound. You know, you can get a good go at getting some really solid production levels in, recording your dialogue and then edit it from there.
Yeah, so, I mean, the one thing that we always did spend good money on, or I spent good money on, was microphones. You'll get away with bad video, you'll never get away with bad audio. We always had, you know, spend twice as much on your mics as you do on your cameras. And that's feasible now because cameras are dirt cheap. Get good quality mics, make sure you do your noise rejection, make sure you've got a windshield on them as well if you're out and about.
Yeah.
Don't compromise on that, because once you've got it on there, it's a pain in the butt trying to get it off. And you never, you know, the old thing, you never shot for the dark room when I started photography. You always shot to try and produce the finished article without having to go and dodge or burn anything to get lightness or shade into where you needed it. Same with this, really. If you can make it first time and just publish it, that saves you a lot of heartache. And a lot of post that sometimes, especially with audio, some post you'll just never get it out. It'll always be compromised.
Mm. Brilliant. Well, thanks very much, Theo. Well
thanks
done.
For me.
No worries. No, no worries.
Good idea.
Yeah. So three excellent ideas. You said
three diverse as well. That was the diversity is there. It's not.
Yeah.
None of them followed like, well, this is popular, so I'm going to do this, and I'm going to copy what someone else has done. They're three original ideas. Three diverse ideas that I think are all brilliant.
Yeah, I think, and it's only three ideas out of the whole group that we had. I mean, we could invite, you know, every other student in, and there would be another good idea. And hope maybe there's a segment that we could run this podcast out, you know, with other people, and we could do that. And if it spun off some ideas and people actually went out and did that and made a podcast of it, that would be brilliant.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I think it would be. It'll be excellent. So tell me, just as a sort of like catch up, how have you found your visit to our studio?
I'm impressed. I love the studios and the facilities. They're excellent. I mean, you're sitting with equipment that didn't exist when we started. And the equipment that did exist at the time we couldn't afford. I mean, it was literally 20 grand for a video mixing desk.
Mm.
So it's to see the level of kit that you've got here and the use of it as well as and talking to the lad who was doing the background edit to the video that he shot that
Max.
We spoke to Max
yes.
Yeah. Clear knowledge of the software good. I mean, I'm a ninja in Photoshop. There's very little I can't do.
Mm.
Learn your software, learn the shortcuts, and that was clearly evident this morning.
Yeah.
And it was great. Yeah, I think. It's a really nice facility here, mate. Well done.
Well, it wasn't me. I only came. It was here when I arrived. I found it. It's mine.
Yeah.
I'm having it. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We had the guy from the BBC. He works at the BBC and he works at Ravensbourne. He came in and he was like, "This is the best college." Just bigging up our own.
I've never
here.
A facility like this. He's never
like,
seen
oh.
a facility.
So this is fantastic. This is for a college. This is the best college facility that he's been into.
Yeah,
and we're
good.
Like, oh. That's something, you know, that we, but it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter what the cameras are. It doesn't matter what the lighting is. It doesn't matter what we're doing here. What really matters is like having students, people coming out and sitting down and coming up with three really strong ideas, which don't need all this to be made. And even if it wasn't here, you could still do it. And if you didn't have those ideas and you did have this stuff, would be terrible.
I'm just going to go back to what I said at the start, though. I came from an era where I had to make do, both in podcasting and in photography. When I started, I had to make things that, you know, my son had a National Book Day thing at school, and he said, "I want to go as Minecraft Steve the night before." And he said, "I want a diamond sword." So I went and got some felt that I had down at the office and some cardboard, and I physically made him a diamond sword that was the right size for him to take in. And my wife was like, "What? I didn't know you could do that." I'm like, "This is what I used to do. I used to build things to use in shoots."
Yeah.
And the key message here is, yes, you've got a lot of technology here that can help you, but it's how you use that technology, because if the core of what you're doing is not entertaining, and if the core of what you're doing lacks depth, lacks a story arc, as Kit was saying, those kind of things will show up pretty quickly, and it doesn't matter how much technology you've got, you'll never fix that. So you've got to have that foundation of good entertainment, good content, and then the facilities that you've got here will build upon that.
Yeah. If you were their age, if you were starting out now, how would you feel about your future and the life, you know, what you could do with your career?
I mean, I remember I'm an active photographer and videographer, and I love Final Cut and I love Logic and all the other things that I use. I remember doing video switching between two machines and a crossfader and VHS. That was a nightmare, trying to edit two pieces together. Life was a lot harder, but I'm happy that life was hard then, because I've got the grounding that means that now I'm not reliant on the tech. And my advice to all of the kids in your class who are clearly talented is don't rely on the tech, rely on the core of what you know and the ideas that you have, and set up for success rather than try and get it back in post-production, because that will fail you more often than not. It won't help.
Yeah. I was always told when I set up my design agency and things that one of the bits of advice that I was given as a business person was plan to succeed, plan for success to happen, because too many businesses make plans for when it goes wrong or what they'll do when things go wrong. And when things go right, they're not prepared.
Absolutely. They can't take advantage. You want to fix 10 things in post, not 1,000 things.
Yeah.
And particularly things like lighting. With photography, if I get someone who says, oh, teach me a bit about photography, the thing I always say to them is dark darks look more natural than white whites. So if you've got a contrast there where your blacks have filled in on your image, don't worry about it. It won't look bad. Whereas if you've burnt that out, there is no colour information there. There's no pixel information to recover. And the more you try and recover it, the more it'll look. So if you blow out someone's side of someone's face with a light, that's never coming back.
No.
You're always better to slightly underexpose than overexpose, because you can always bring it up.
Yeah. Well, I think that I actually have no idea how long we broadcast for or we've been going for, because we haven't got a clock.
Just shove that out.
But
top and tail it and stick it on the net.
I can see a clock. I could... One hour, 100 minutes, something that's really perfect. And I think, you know, a testament to how good the ideas that we talked about were.
BTN always had a 15-minute rule.
15 minutes?
Yeah, if you've got one person, podcast is 15 minutes. If you've got two, it's 30. If you've got three, it's 45.
Okay.
And if you've got five, you never went over an hour.
Yes.
And we've had five and we're an hour.
So some of those modern, like Joe Rogan, is 3-hour epic podcasts, honestly.
Yeah. It's just vomit.
It's just too long.
Yeah.
Yeah. In that case, remains for me to say thank you so much for the time, because it's not just the hour that we've been sat here reminiscing about the times and hearing this stuff, but it's the drive here, the drive back, the setting up the studio and things.
Yeah,
thank
pleasure.
You so much for giving your time over and things. And I think it shows it's the ethos of podcasting. It's, you know, ask, give, get back.
Well, we're still going to do some Q&A afterwards, I suppose.
Keep turning so around. Nice. With that in mind, thanks very much to Kit, Cam and Theo for their excellent ideas. I would like to reiterate that just because we talked about those aren't the only three good ideas. There's another three and another three and another three that we could easily have talked about, which is like really good to see such depth of good ideas and talent. So thanks very much. Going on a shout out to our camera crew who have been sat here in the studio. Well done, guys. Thank you so much. Thanks to the sound and thanks to the vision in the gallery as well, who've put it together for a whole hour. Well done. Do we do a round of applause? Does that go alive in there? It's not professional, is it?
I'm not going to applaud myself.
No, we don't do a round of applause. Right, that's us out then.